Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Before I discuss the Ukraine war and why Putin would want to start wars in other places, especially Africa, I just want to show you some photographs so that you can see that I'm not just making this stuff up about Putin and Russia and the blacks. In fact, I can do whole videos just focusing on the Russians and the blacks and South Africa and the Russians. That in and of itself is a big story. Many people in the white right think that war and politics is simply based on right and wrong and morality and what you like and what you don't like. The reality is that war in politics is driven by other factors that are very much firmer, and it gets very nasty. And you'll find that wars can reoccur in the same places, same locations, even centuries apart, because the problems persist. But let's not look at the Russians further back. Let's look at them right now in the time of Putin. So let me show you a few things that I've got. I've got a lot more, but let's just have a look at a few quick items. These photos that you see on the screen in front of you, these are from my original African Crisis website, and this is from 2006 when Putin came to South Africa. Putin has visited South Africa once, and he's due to come back in August 2023, and that's a separate topic because America wants the blacks to arrest Putin, and that isn't going to happen. So in 2006, Putin came to South Africa, and these photos are images that I took at the time from ETV, which is a South African TV station. So there on the top left, you can see Putin with President Thabo Mbeki of South Africa. They are busy having some kind of conference. Then top middle is Putin and President Thabo Mbeki, and they have signed various agreements that they're about to hand to each other. Then you see Putin on the top right there. He's busy giving a talk. That's a close-up of the photo in the bottom right, where you can see Putin, and you can see he's at a podium that's got the South African, the new modern South African stupid asshole coat of arms on it. Then in the bottom left, you can see there's a military parade, and in the bottom middle, you can see Putin and Mbeki at the military parade. Just a quick rundown of Putin in South Africa in 2006, and this is from my old archives. I can pull out more stuff, but this will just give you a bit of an idea. When Putin arrived here, it was for a two-day visit, and Putin met the blacks, spoke to the blacks, hobnobbed with the blacks. These blacks are communists. They were sponsored by the Russians. The Russians gave them all the weapons that they needed. The Russians trained them. The Russians even made camps for them. There was a time when these blacks were not even allowed in Africa. I repeat, there was a time when no black African nation would even allow these blacks, who are the ruling party of South Africa today, they wouldn't allow them bases in any country in all of Africa. And the Russians came and took those blacks and took them up into Russia and the Ukraine, and they even put them in lodgings in Odessa. And they lived in Odessa for years. So lots of these blacks have actually been to Russia and lived in Russia and the Ukraine because of this stuff that happened in the 1960s. When Putin came here, he signed a whole bunch of agreements, and we'll discuss a little bit about it shortly. But returning to my original African crisis articles, I had one that mentioned that, and this was in the news, that when Putin arrived in South Africa, apart from meeting the blacks, Putin specifically requested a meeting with the Jew, Nikki Oppenheimer. Who is Nikki Oppenheimer? Oppenheimer is the Jew who owned Anglo-American. What is Anglo-American? Anglo-American is the biggest mining company in South Africa. It is an offshoot of the mining company created by Cecil Rhodes, Cecil John Rhodes, from Britain. He was a Freemason, he was the founder of Rhodesia, and he was the South African agent for Rothschild, for the British Rothschilds. After Rhodes died, he didn't have a wife, didn't have children. Then the Jewish Oppenheimers were brought in, and they took over the mining companies of Cecil Rhodes. Anglo-American was so powerful and so wealthy that in the 1960s, in the Hook Report, it was estimated by the government that the Jewish Anglo-American Corporation owned 70% of the South African economy. Owned 70% of the South African economy, including all the English language newspapers. So the Oppenheimers are the biggest economic players in South Africa. They were the wealthiest people in Africa. And when Putin came here, he specifically requested a private meeting with Nikki Oppenheimer. We do not know what was discussed in that meeting. And this was in 2006. When the blacks came to power in South Africa, they were totally close to the Russians and the Cubans. Their most important allies were the Russians and the Cubans. Nelson Mandela was extremely close to the Russians. Of course, Nelson Mandela is a Jewish creation as well. The Jews put the Russians and the blacks in touch with each other. That's how this thing worked. The Jews wanted to start a war in South Africa between the blacks and the whites, and the Jews went and got the blacks to become commies. Then the Jews got them in touch with the Russians, and that's how this whole thing started. So returning to 2006, this particular news article on the top, South Africa's U-turn on satellite launch, a mystery. So what it is that in October 2006, when Putin was here in South Africa, President Mbeki of South Africa announced that South Africa would launch a microsatellite on board a Russian rocket. So then things started going wrong between the blacks and the Russians, and we don't know exactly what went wrong. But that is from that time. That is just one of many things the blacks and the Russians were trying to do. There was all kinds of close ties and deals that they were striking. But I suspect that the Americans especially went and worked to destroy this relationship as much as they could. But even so, the blacks are very close to the Russians, as you will see. In the bottom article, this is from another website, and this is from 2002, and it says, Mandela finally picks up his Lenin Peace Prize. And it talks about how Nelson Mandela had been given a prize by the Russians, and eventually he had a chance to go and actually pick it up. And that is just one of the examples of how close these blacks and Russians were. What I forgot to mention in my earlier discussion about Putin's 2006 visit to South Africa is that never at any time did Putin ask to see any whites. He didn't ask to see the Afrikaners, didn't ask to see the Boers. He was just meeting with the blacks and the Jews, and that's it. Then in 2019, and you can look at the screen in front of you, in 2019, Putin created a Russia-Africa summit, and he invited a bunch of blacks from different countries to come and talk to him. And this is a graphic on the left that shows countries that he met with, but it only shows about a dozen of them. I recall that he had something like 37 countries there. He had a lot of countries there. In fact, I'm certain I can see some countries that definitely were there that are not on this graphic. So if we go through them, Angola. Angola used to be Portuguese colony. It's big, it's rich. Guinea is small. DR Congo, very important, extremely wealthy, very important to America. Ethiopia, minor importance. Kenya, somewhat important to the British. Rwanda, not really important. Central African Republic, not really important. Down at the bottom, South Africa, yes, most important. Uganda, mildly important. Sudan is there, and also Egypt. Egypt is important. In the photo on the right, that black guy who's grinning from ear to ear, he's from Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia. Just look at how much he's grinning. And in other photos where Putin is meeting blacks, you'll see they're grinning from ear to ear. Putin is a big hero in Africa for the blacks. They see the Russians as being so awesome to them in helping them to get freedom from white rule. They love the Russians, and they look up to the Russians big time. So here's more from Putin. There on the right, you can see the Russia-Africa summit, and you can see Putin with another black president. There in the bottom right, you can see Putin whispering in the ear of the black Jew, Ramaphosa, from South Africa. That's the black Jew who runs South Africa currently. So there's Putin having a little word with him there. They seem to be pretty friendly. Then, and this is more recent, here on the left, you'll see a tweet from the Russian president, and it's dated May the 25th, 2021. So on May the 25th, 2021, Putin tweeted the following: President Putin sends greetings to African heads of state and government on Africa Day. Please accept my heartfelt greetings on the occasion of Africa Day, symbol of the victory of your continent's nations over colonialism. Okay, over colonialism. That's against the whites, all right? And here you can see, below it, you can see a photo, that photo of Putin with those blacks. That was probably taken in 2019. There's Putin and his black buddies. And the guy on the right of Putin, in other words, closer to the green, the guy there, that's the black Jew, Ramaphosa. And then you can see the message here clearer in green. So Putin's a big buddy of the blacks, and he's proud. All the Russians are proud of the fact that they worked to destroy colonialism. In other words, to destroy the whites. And the Russians physically armed and trained the blacks to a shocking degree. A shocking degree. I'm not joking when I tell you shiploads of advanced weaponry came to Africa. We'll return to that topic later. The blacks and the Russians had many military agreements, and they always show how close they are. In fact, in 2023, there are supposed to be naval maneuvers between the South African Navy and the Russian Navy, and the Americans are very irritated by this. But the Russian Air Force was in South Africa in the 1990s when Mandela became the president. The Russian Air Force was here in the 1990s. They flew lots of their planes here. They did lots of exercises, military exercises, with the South Africans. And this image that you see in front of you, this is from a letter that was published by the SANDF, that is the South African National Defense Force, that is the modern army under black rule. This was published in 2019, 21st of October 2019, so this is around about that time of the Africa Summit, and it says, subject: the South African Air Force hosts the visiting aerospace forces of the Russian Federation. The South African Air Force, SAF, will be hosting the aerospace forces of the Russian Federation during their visit in the Republic of South Africa. The RSA and Russian Federation have strong historical links with diplomatic relations established between both countries in February 28, 1992. The military-to-military relations between the two countries is not solely built on struggle politics. Let me stop there. Struggle politics, that is what they called their war against the whites of South Africa. They didn't call it a war, they called it a struggle. And that is the war that was fought between the blacks and the whites, and the Russians were behind it. The Russians were the ones arming it. So here it's talking about the relations being due to struggle politics, and then it goes, but rather on fostering mutually beneficial partnerships based on common interests. And so it continues. The letter is actually longer, but I didn't fit the whole thing into this image. But just to show you that again, in 2019, the Russian Air Force was in South Africa doing maneuvers with the South African Air Force. And I just want to remind people who think that Putin is some kind of white loving Christian and that he'll work with white racists, etc. Here are a couple of photos and stories where you can see that Putin has got lots of Jews around him. In fact, recently a Russian even contacted me and sent me a bunch more photos of Putin and all his top quotes Russian people. And you'll see more Jews, okay? Putin has got bunches of Jews around him as well. Don't believe otherwise. So here on the left is a photo of Putin with a bunch of Jews. They might even be rabbis. And the story there is Putin initiated a law against anti-Semitic biblical commentary. Anti-Semitic biblical commentary. That's in the top left there. That's the photo with the rabbis. And you can see the same story somewhere else in the bottom right. There's another article about the law against anti-Semitic biblical commentary. Then there in the top middle, there is Putin with some Jews. He's busy lighting some freaking candles on, I think it could be one of their menorahs or something. So there's Putin. And then on the far right, you'll see Putin with another Jew who's very close to him. This Jew appears in a bunch of different photos. This is a high-ranking Jew. He's in meetings with Putin. And then, bottom left, there is Putin. It says, President Putin signs a law criminalizing Nazi revisionist tactics, criminalizing Nazi revisionist tactics. And when Putin invaded Ukraine, he said that part of it is the denazification of the Ukraine. So people who think that Putin is some kind of savior of whites, they really are going to be in for some shocks. The Russians may be white, but they don't really care too much about whites. People may be used to thinking that Russia is insanely enormous. It is the largest country in the world, but its size is distorted due to it being at a higher latitude. This map shows the proper size of Russia compared to Africa. Africa is incredibly huge, and Africa is filled with minerals. Don't underestimate the size of Africa. Even South Africa is pretty big. So there you can see it superimposed over Africa. That's the real size of Russia. I just want to show whites, especially whites outside Africa, the kind of stuff that we faced all the time here in South Africa when it was under white rule. This picture that you see here is a photograph of captured weaponry that was used by the ANC. If you look at the very bottom part of it, of this caption from a book, it says, "A display of confiscated armaments used by the ANC, the ANC is the current ruling party of South Africa, originating from the Soviet Union and various Eastern Bloc countries." So those are weapons. There you can see the various weapons with their magazine rounds, etc. And if you look further down, there are detonators. Here along the bottom you can see hand grenades, you can see various kinds of hand grenades. But the weapon that I want to draw your attention to is, you'll see in this photo that I drew a red arrow. And you see on the right, I drew a red arrow here more or less on the right middle. And I drew a red arrow to this particular kind of weapon. This thing is known as a limpet mine. And I think a limpet mine can also be magnetic. And a limpet mine is a special kind of a bomb that the Russians produced a lot of, and you can stick it onto things and you can set a timer and it explodes. When I moved from Pretoria to Johannesburg in the 1980s, these limpet mines were exploding all over Johannesburg all the time. This carried on for years. Limpet mines were being used by the blacks. They were blowing up people in restaurants. They were blowing up whites all over the show. I lived in an apartment building that was next to a park in Johannesburg. I lived in different places, but the longest period of time that I lived in one place was in an apartment that was on the sixth floor, and it was overlooking a park here in Johannesburg. And I can't tell you the number of times that I heard limpet mines going off. We'd have limpet mines going off in the middle of the night, and then there's a mystery, then the police would be out hunting. Because the apartment was also close to the railway line and very close to the Johannesburg station, to the Johannesburg railway station, and the blacks were trying to blow up the railway line, and the blacks were trying to blow up different things. And sometimes the blacks would set these things off, and then the blacks make a mistake, and then these limpet mines blow the blacks up. And I remember one instance very close to my apartment. It was maybe no more than 200 meters from the apartment building I lived in. There was a hell of a bang one night, and the police were out and their sirens were wailing, and they were driving up and down for hours through the night looking for the scene of this explosion, and it was only the next morning when they discovered in the daylight, they discovered the blood splatter on the sidewalk, and a black had been trying to arm this kind of limpet mine, and he blew himself away on the sidewalk, and it wasn't far from the art gallery that was also nearby. And so sometimes the blacks score an own goal and they blow themselves away. And these limpet mines were so common here in Johannesburg. These things would be going off so often. They later even built a very special kind of a rubbish bin made out of concrete. I have got the photos somewhere. But they built a special kind of rubbish bin because the blacks would be putting these things inside rubbish bins and it would be blowing people away who are waiting for buses, etc. These blacks were using these limpet mines like crazy. And these things come from the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc countries. These things killed lots of people. The photo that you see on the screen in front of you is one of my photos from when I lived in that apartment building on the sixth floor in Johannesburg. And this is from an article that I put up on African Crisis years ago when I was talking about these limpet mines. And so this photo is taken from the sixth floor. And if you look, then that park is right in front of you. You'll see there are various buildings and trees, and you'll even see some vehicles in the middle bottom. And these are vehicles that are in that park. These are probably municipal workers. And then you'll see that there's a street running down the left-hand side. It's rather dark there, but there's a street running down the left-hand side there. And a limpet mine, I actually saw a limpet mine going off once, and it was sometime in the mid-80s, maybe 1986 or so. I was actually sitting at my little DOS computer in front of the window, and it was at night time, and I was looking out over the park, and I was working on my little DOS computer, and there was an explosion right in front of me, and I'm on the sixth floor. If you look on that photo, you'll see two red arrows that I put on the photo, two big red arrows that are pointing downwards. Now look at the leftmost red arrow. It is there by a building that is just behind those vehicles, and the limpet mine went off there. The limpet mine was placed on the other side of that building, and I could see the dust and everything there in the evening because there were lights shining from the various places, and I could see the dust rising from where the explosion took place. Then the cops came, then they had to stop all the cars, and then people wanted to come and see, and they had to chase the people away because they were worried that the blacks had maybe planted more than one limpet mine, and that if the first limpet mine goes off and a crowd starts gathering, that there may be other limpet mines and then they'll kill real people. But in this case, it wasn't so. And so that was the only limpet mine that went off that evening. But it's the only one that I saw directly going off. Otherwise, I would hear them because they could be heard from far away. They could be heard from a kilometer or so, or maybe even more away, and I'd be able to hear in the night, there's one that's gone off, it's midnight or 2 a.m. or whatever time, or some black has been trying to blow up the railway line tonight. And these limpet mines, these Russian limpet mines, were going off a lot here in South Africa. Johannesburg was a hotbed of bombing and stuff for years on end, as these black terrorists are trying to blow up stuff and stuff things up for the whites. And all this weaponry supplied by Russia, Russia trains the blacks, etc. Either Russia or one of Russia's buddies train the blacks. And even guys like Gaddafi in Libya, they were training blacks how to do all kinds of things. Lots of these guys, they were all working together. So now we'll get down to the business of why would Putin want to start wars in Africa and other places? I published an article about it recently, and I pointed out that there is evidence that the Wagner Group are responsible for arming up the RSF in Sudan, and it looks to me like Russia is the one that's pushing the Sudan conflict all of a sudden, and it started early in April. And the Wagner Group were spotted. Their plane had come from Syria. They had been dropping off arms and training blacks. The Wagner Group have been busy in other parts of Africa as well, including the neighboring state here in Mozambique. But they aren't such wonderful fighters, because some Wagner guys were captured by black Muslims, and the black Muslims cut their heads off. I think they cut their heads off, 10 of these Wagner Group guys. Then the Wagner Group decided to call it quits, and they actually pulled out of Mozambique. And that little war is still raging. That's another topic, also an important topic, but that's the closest war that's raging close to South Africa. And South Africa can't even control that little war. And that's good news for the whites, I must tell you. But that's another complicated topic. We'll return to it if there's anything in particular I want to focus on. But the Muslims have started wars in Africa, and those wars are raging, and those wars have not stopped. But the Russians could start it. Again, and I've told people, Americans who don't believe me, I've told them that most whites, most if not all the whites who were killed in South Africa, Rhodesia and the Portuguese colonies, that most of the whites, if not all the whites who were killed with weapons, were killed by Russian weapons. There are, of course, some blacks who got Chinese weapons, especially in Rhodesia, but the Russians are responsible for most of the deaths of whites in southern Africa. We'll return to that topic. So, someone in South Africa, when I mentioned to them that the Russians may be lighting a fire in Sudan and that this could be the next front of the Ukraine war, this guy asked me why. Why would the Russians benefit from this? So the rest of this video is a discussion about that. Hi Marius, thanks for your question. So you said, with reference to your article, what makes you think that a new war front in Africa would help Putin? Let me try to answer that. So here is a summary that I wrote to Marius to give him an overview of my thinking. So let me just read it. The bottom line of why Putin needs to open up new fronts is this. Russia is struggling tremendously in Ukraine and is losing. Even by earlier this year, it could no longer advance. Plus, there's a tank offensive coming, perhaps in the next 4 to 8 weeks, from Ukraine, with 40,000 troops who've been training for months in tactics to break through the Russian lines. This could give the Russians serious problems. The Russians have lost so many men, especially so much equipment, that the Russians are unable to break through Ukrainian lines. Putin can't go nuclear. He doesn't have new sophisticated weapons that can match the West. He is using older and older weapons. He can, at best, try to hold the Ukrainians back for years, unless the Ukrainians can break through with tanks. Then he's got really serious problems. So no matter what he throws at Ukraine, he can't drive them back. So the only option is to start trouble elsewhere in the world for his prime enemies who are supplying Ukraine. That is why he would want to start wars in Africa, the Third World, or anywhere. China is too weak and pathetic to take Taiwan now. In a nutshell, Russia is returning to the old alliances of the Cold War, and you'll see all of them: Cuba, North Korea, China, Iran, Syria, coming into play. He may be trying hard to help the Chinese get up off their asses to cause trouble. The more trouble he can cause, the more it costs the USA and wastes resources and creates new political problems globally. The global economy, including China, is very fragile. But Africa and the Third World are the most fragile. He has many black allies from the time Russia supported the liberation wars against the whites. The real goal is to cause problems anywhere and everywhere and light fires. Then America has to run around the planet, putting them out and having to deal with the mess. Also, Africa is critical to Europe, and this causes huge problems for Europe. It can mess up the politics of America and Europe and create all kinds of nightmares. So it seems to me we're back to the Cold War. But the Cold War on steroids. Wars often are refought in the same places for the same reasons, even centuries apart. And Africa proved it was a place where the Russians could get a lot done in the past, and it could work well for them. For Putin, he does not need to win. He just needs to start wars that need weapons, and he can mess the West around for a long time. America is totally global and linked to everyone. Any war really begins stuffing things up, especially if it affects mines and economics. By destabilizing Africa or any other region, it will cause big financial and economic and military problems for this globalism that is so fragile that America put together. So it will help to alleviate the pressure against him. The worse things go for Russia, the more impetus Putin has to create new wars. There is evidence that Russia is giving its best weapons technology to China. China is proving to be weak and useless, and Russia may be doing all it can to get China rolling so that it can really draw America into a much bigger conflict. Even North Korea can cause mayhem with its missiles. Those Chinese spy balloons that went across America might also have been a Putin-related project. So Putin has got a weak ally problem, and he needs to beef them up. And so any war, any violence anywhere that can hurt Europe and America is good. Africa is like dry tinder, and it's a place where Putin has dozens of black allies. South Africa is also a potential place for Putin to go to work, but it's a very complex topic and not easy to explain. Mostly, we in South Africa are fine, but when the ANC gets more desperate, the ANC being the ruling party, they may want those weapons from Putin. The ANC, that is the black communists who rule South Africa, the ANC is caught between a rock and a hard place. I'll be watching this with tremendous interest. There is already a battle going on at a diplomatic level in Africa between America and Russia. For us in South Africa, this is fine. I think it will open huge opportunities for us Afrikaners. South Africa is our turf, our backyard. This could work for us, and the West might become desperate enough to help us. So that's the summary of my reply to Marius. Let me continue with a more detailed discussion, which touches on many of these topics in more detail. And regarding the nuclear stuff, I've explained it before in videos and in articles. I've explained that the American generals have met the Russian generals, and they told them that any nuclear stuff would result in an immediate smashing of Russian nuclear power by the Americans. So the understanding between the American generals and the Russian generals is that if the Russians do anything nuclear, even a tactical nuclear weapon, America will come into the conflict and will attack Russian nuclear stuff and smash it up. And rest assured, the Americans can do this in about one day. I'm not joking with you. So that is why nuclear stuff is off the cards. And the Russian generals do know that the Americans have got the superior technology and the ability to penetrate Russian airspace and to do as they please. They've been doing this since the 1960s. The Americans can clobber the hell out of the Russians. So that's why the Russians can talk nuclear till they're all blue in the face, but you won't see a single nuclear thing happening. And don't be fooled into thinking that warfare is like politics and that it's about morality. It's got nothing to do with morality. It's about who can clobber the other side. The generals on all sides know the game, and they know what's real, and they know what can and can't be done. So you can talk all kinds of shit up to your eyeballs, but generals know that if the one side is stronger than the other one, and you dare to make a move, and the other one can clobber you, that maybe that's not a wise course of action. That's why the Russians can talk nuclear, but there ain't going to be no nuclear stuff. None. So here's the rest of the answer, and a general discussion, including about white South Africans. I've been trying to follow the war as closely as I can, and I was especially concerned about how is this war going to develop in 2023? What are the possibilities? And earlier in the year, guys like Douglas McGregor were saying that the Russians had such a huge offensive coming. It's massively enormous, and they're just going to roll right over the Ukrainians. And Douglas McGregor, Colonel Douglas McGregor, even said that Kiev is going to be the next stop for Putin. And he was talking like that months ago already. And so I was looking at these things, but it became obvious as this war has developed that with the reinforcements and the weapons that the Ukrainians were getting from the West, that in actual fact, the Ukrainians are actually amazingly good soldiers. And lots of them are just people like us. They're like ex-school teachers and mathematicians, and now they're doing artillery and stuff, and they're very freaking good at it. But the real weaponry that was the game changer last year, the weaponry that allowed the Ukrainians to push the Russians back, were HIMARS and the heavy artillery that came from America and Europe. So in February, when I was looking at this whole thing, I was still waiting to see how this massive mega Russian offensive would go, and I was already not convinced that it's going to do much, and I thought that it might move forward at a maximum of 10 kilometers a day, but that it could never reach Kiev, and that even if it did move forward, that the Ukrainians are going to engage in a counter-offensive. And I expected the Russians to grind to a halt again. In actual fact, what I was thinking of in February, the Russians have done much, much worse. They weren't able to advance anywhere except Bakhmut. And even what they did in Bakhmut was very pathetic. Even now, it's very pathetic. But the real game changer was the artillery. And so, what I was looking at was I was asking myself a bunch of questions about Putin's situation and what options does Putin really have. And lots of people who look at military stuff, they think that the military is like politics, that it's about good and bad, that it's about we're being kind to you and this and that. But it's nothing like that at all. It's nothing like that at all. The military is there to kill and smash the enemy. That's what the military is there for. War is about reality. And it doesn't matter what anybody says. What's really important is who can beat who on the battlefield. And we've now had a whole year to watch this situation, and it's been obvious that the Russians are nothing like they're cracked up to be. And the other thing that was kind of unique for me in watching this war in Ukraine has been that I've now begun to start understanding a little bit about the politics of that whole region, of what you could call the Asiatic whites. And the thing that was clear to me is that Putin is trying to raise troops as much as he possibly can, but he's even got problems on the home front. So there are weaknesses on the Russian side in the home front. He could raise more troops, but in order to do so, he has to legally declare war. And it's clear that he's got problems at home, and that's why he keeps referring to this thing as the special military operation, because he can't go through the legal process of declaring war and forcing a big mobilization. So Putin needs more troops and more weapons, but he's actually taking big losses and they've lost a lot of weaponry. And all the pro-Russian supporters try to come up with excuses for the endless amounts of Russian failure, but there's no amount of excuses that can really cover what is actually happening on the battlefield. That the Russians really have got serious problems at many levels, and the Ukrainians, with these Western weapons, are clobbering them. And you can see in Putin's statements and the statements of the Russian government that they're constantly trying things, and they were constantly trying to scare the West with these things about nuclear war, hypersonic missiles, etc. And then there are other indications that Putin's got serious problems. Like Belarus is a country that borders on Ukraine. It's a smallish white nation with a population of about 10 million people. And the leader of Belarus is Putin's closest buddy. But Putin is visiting them. Putin is sending troops there. They've got lots of deals going on between them. But the one thing that Belarus does not do, no matter how friendly Putin is, and no matter how much Putin tries to get Belarus involved in this, Belarus does not declare war on Ukraine, and Belarus does not send troops to go and fight the Ukrainians. Belarus is clearly afraid of getting involved in this war. So Putin's problem is that he's hitting with everything he has. I've explained why he can't go nuclear, why nuclear is off the cards. But he's stuck. He's stuck in a military stalemate. And he's stuck in this stalemate in this conventional war because of the weaponry that's come from the West, and he's unable to actually conquer these Ukrainians. Plus, the West has actually come and said that they're going to give the Ukrainians a bunch of tanks. Actually, it was the Americans driving this. The Ukraine war is driven from the Western side by America. America is the big boss here. And America is making all the high-level decisions. And America is even telling the Europeans what to do. So the problem is Putin is stuck in a war that no matter what he mobilizes, no matter what he does, he's losing troops at a big rate and he's lost huge amounts of armor. And all the pro-Russian supporters, they listen to people like Douglas MacGregor, and Douglas MacGregor is saying, oh no, for every one Russian that's getting killed, there are seven Ukrainians dying, and that the Russians are crushing the Ukrainians. Meanwhile, the Russians can't even move forward. But Douglas MacGregor, he's talking up a storm. And there are other people who are using internet techniques and satellite techniques to actually check out what is going on the battlefield. And the best people who've done an analysis of Russian tank losses are people in Holland, and they've actually monitored and catalogued every single tank that's been destroyed in the war. And they've actually come back and said that the Russians have lost 1,000 tanks. They've lost 1,000 out of 1,500 tanks that they had, have already been obliterated. And the Russians are now starting to pull out old tanks from their vast stockpiles. They are pulling out the kinds of tanks that they used to give to Iraq and to the Middle East. So the problem that Putin has got is he's trying to fight this war and he's trying to move forward, but he's got nothing that can actually beat these Ukrainians on the battlefield. His hypersonic missiles don't make much difference. He can't use nuclear weapons because the Americans will clobber the crap out of him if he touches a nuclear weapon. If Putin uses even a tiny nuclear weapon, the Americans will smash Russia like you cannot believe. So you'll see that Putin is talking less and less nuclear. He's trying to play some word games here and there. He moved some nuclear stuff into Belarus, but he cannot fire it, because if he drops any kind of nuclear weapon, there's going to be big trouble. So the problem is that Putin's got troops and he's got a military. He's taking lots of losses, even though he's recruiting more men and he's trying to push up the output of his factories. The fact of the matter is he's already lost a lot of his best stuff and he's not able to even push the Ukrainians back. Whereas the Ukrainians have got these tanks. I just want to discuss the tanks for a second. The Jew Zelensky has been running around asking for everything under the sun, and he's asked for hundreds of aircraft, etc. But I've actually gone and looked at the military analyses of the generals and the American military. And what they decided, people forget that the Americans are doing wargaming all the time, political wargaming, military wargaming all the time. And they don't just give the Jew Zelensky everything that he wants. They specifically gave those HIMARS and the heavy artillery, and those things, especially the HIMARS, changed the battle last year. It really impacted the Russian artillery. So Zelensky was asking for hundreds of tanks, hundreds of aircraft, and then the Americans came back and the Americans said that in this year they will give 100 tanks. But the American tanks have got serious problems with them. They're very difficult to maintain, they're very complex, they're very laborious. Whereas the German Leopards are just the same quality, maybe even slightly better, but they are cheaper, they're easier to get off the ground, and those things have been rolled out. And then America went and put pressure on Germany to move those tanks out by March. There is something big that happened, and the Americans went and forced the Germans to send those tanks. And they have given hundreds, the Americans and the Germans and everybody have given hundreds of other armored infantry fighting vehicles to go with those tanks. So the tank numbers might not seem big, but there are hundreds of accompanying vehicles. And the impression that I got is that the American generals, the American and British generals who now have got combat experience from the Middle East, they have looked at this problem in Ukraine and they've said that the key weapon that the Ukrainians need to break this stalemate are tanks. So Putin had an offensive, but he's stuck and he can't go very far, and he knew early on that a big armored offensive is coming from the Ukrainians this summer, and he's seen the effects of Western high-tech weaponry. So the question that I was asking myself is this: Putin cannot mobilize, he's lost lots of his best weaponry, he can't use his nukes, his hypersonic missiles and other things. Yes, they can hit various things, but they can't change the battlefield. He's lacking the ability to defeat his enemy in Ukraine. He just cannot manage to gather the forces that can actually beat them. Even if he comes in large numbers, the weaponry is so advanced, the weaponry is so powerful, that even if he brings large numbers of troops, which is an old tactic of the Russians going back the last 200 years, even if he brings large numbers of troops, the Western weapons have got such tremendous firepower that they'll just kill them all. So he's busy fighting a fight, and he just doesn't have the means to land a knockout punch on the other side. He can't break through their lines. He can't bring in allies. All his allies are weak. Belarus doesn't want to fight. And if you look closely at Putin, you'll see that it's like Putin has been doing a lot of talking to the Chinese. He's been getting stuff from the Chinese. He's even been giving the Chinese the best of the Russian weapons. And for Putin, the perfect thing would have been if the Chinese would attack Taiwan. So if Putin needs help against the West, if the Chinese would attack Taiwan, then that would immediately make life a hell of a lot easier for the Russians in Ukraine. But there's no ways the Chinese are going to do that. And the Chinese themselves know that they cannot take Taiwan. So the Chinese are very afraid. Despite everybody thinking that the Chinese can just come and conquer everyone on Earth, the truth of the matter is the Chinese cannot even conquer Taiwan. So what has Putin got? Well, the bottom line is that the Russians need to open another front. They need another front somewhere. Some other war that can help to divert attention and move things elsewhere. In fact, if there could be several other wars and conflicts, that would help him. And so that is where I started thinking about Africa and the Third World, because the only real way that Putin can try to fight America in a way that is proven to have some effectiveness is to go back to the Cold War. The Cold War was a means by which Russia could fight America in such a way, using third parties, using proxies. Russia could fight America and the West using proxies in other parts of the world, in Asia, in South America, in Latin America, but especially Africa. The place where the Russians had the most success was in Africa. All those liberation wars, the wars against us, all of those things came from the Russians with some help from the Chinese. But the Russians were the prime movers. And Putin and the Russians still have lots and lots of friends in Africa. In 2019, Putin invited 37 heads of state from Africa to meet with him. And they got together, and South Africa was among them. The greatest victory for the Russians in Africa was the ANC in power in South Africa. That's their big victory. But there are problems with that victory because Britain and America and Europe have come and they've got a lot of economic and diplomatic power over South Africa. They've especially got economic power over South Africa. So the ANC is not proving to be as good an ally as the Russians want, even though the ANC is their prime ally in all of Africa. So the more I look at how this conflict is developing, it looks like we're back to the Cold War. Because, and people forget that history shows that wars and politics often come back to exactly the same geographical places, and that exactly the same battles can be fought in exactly the same places hundreds of years apart. And even this war between Russia and the West in the Ukraine, there's actually been a war almost in exactly the same place before. In the 1850s, the British and the French got together and they fought Russia in the Crimea. In the Crimea. The British and the French sent their fleets and their troops into the Crimea and fought the Russians in the Crimea in the 1850s. And the war was a sort of a stalemate, and then the British and French were going to get the Austrians to join the war, and when the Russians saw that the Austrians were going to join the war as well, the Russians called it quits and the Russians gave up. So the West has already fought the Russians in exactly that same place. So when I looked at this thing earlier this year, I thought to myself, it doesn't help Putin to try and do more things. He's already trying to do everything he can, and he's not achieving much on the battlefield. He's really struggling. In fact, he's so desperate to try and get some kind of victory. You can see the total desperation of the Russians in certain things. You can even see it in their propaganda. Like when Lavrov was there, I think at the G20 or whatever, and Lavrov was saying to the whole audience, oh, when, you know, the West attacked us using Ukraine. And everybody burst out laughing because it was so ridiculous. Yet here was Lavrov trying with a straight face to suddenly pretend that Russia is now the victim. And the problem for the Russians is that they're limited in the stuff that they can say. They're limited because the battlefield is not matching their words. So with useless allies, or allies that just cannot come and step up to the base with the same intensity as the Russians, the only other alternative for the Russians is to look for places where they can light fires. And the third world is unstable and it's backwards, and it's so easy and cheap. So for Putin, he can get so much bang for his buck. For a small amount of money, for a teeny weeny amount of money, for a tiny fraction of 1% of what the Ukraine war is costing him, he can go and start other stuff elsewhere. And the beauty about this globalist world, this stupid globalist world that America has created, is that everything is linked together and everything is totally fragile. It's incredibly fragile. The whole thing is so fragile, people have no clue how fragile this globalist world is. Even China itself is fragile. It's already starting to implode. The whole freaking non-Western world is amazingly fragile, but there's no place that's as fragile and unstable as Africa. There are lots of little wars in Africa right now. And even the Muslims have been able to start wars in Africa, and those wars have been raging now for years and years and years. They've started wars in West Africa and in Central Africa. And so for the Russians to move in and add to these wars and to stoke up some stuff, that would be a big thing. Because if Putin can choose the battlefield and he can choose other places to start wars, all those wars have got knock-on effects. And Africa is so cheap and so easy to do it with. And the West is constantly trying to feed and hold up this stupid African failed continent, and the West will have to send more food and more medicine and more aid, and it's so easy to just create problems. And nation wrecking is very easy, and the Russians have the means to do it. And the Russians produce tons and tons of simple infantry weapons. Those weapons are cheap. They just toss them on a plane. They send a couple of dozen guys with them, train the blacks how to use it, drop off the weaponry, and Bob's your uncle. You've got a war. And Africa actually has got so many festering places for war. Now, the other thing about Africa is Africa's held together by the West and by Europe, mainly through economic and political ties, but it's utterly fragile, and both America and the West don't really have much in the way of troops in Africa. The French had the most troops, and the French tried the hardest, and the blacks have already kicked the French out. Now, Africa is not of much importance to the Americans, but Africa is much more important to the Europeans. There are even factories in South Africa that are making cars for the Europeans. And the Europeans are buying minerals from Africa. And there are certain minerals that America is buying from Africa. So Africa, as a supply of minerals to the European economy especially, is the big thing. If Putin can mess with that, then it really hurts the Europeans. And the problem is, if he starts and can fuel wars in Africa, those wars can create tremendous amounts of problems for the West. The Americans, I've watched the Americans and all the American stuff for a long time, and I must tell you that from what I've looked at in history, the Americans are more afraid of meddling in Africa than anybody on the planet. Africa is the one place where America is really scared. America is not keen on fighting in Africa at all. But Africa is in Europe's sphere of influence, and Europe draws so much stuff from Africa. There is so much that comes from Africa for Europe. So if Africa becomes unstable, it really is going to be a problem for Europe. For Europe and Britain, they're really going to battle with Africa. And they don't have military forces in Africa. And these conflicts in Africa, once they start, they don't stop. And these things can have huge humanitarian consequences. And I've even seen with wars in Africa that One war can lead to another war. One humanitarian crisis can result in a bigger humanitarian crisis elsewhere, which leads to other tensions, which leads to blacks killing each other. This has happened before. So Africa is a fragile, fragile powder keg, and the Russians just have to move around Africa carefully and stoke a few fires here and there, and they could have wars that could run for quite a long time and cause a lot of trouble. Now, that Sudan war, for example, is going to affect Egypt. It's going to affect the Middle East. The Sudan war is going to affect those things already. There's going to be people fleeing from the Sudan. Some of them are going to want to flee to Europe and America. So wars in Africa could not only cause problems for Europe in terms of mineral supplies, critical stuff for their economy not arriving, but it can also result in accelerating the number of blacks fleeing from Africa to Europe, especially. I personally love the idea of Putin lighting fires in Africa. I think if Putin lights fires in Africa, anywhere in Africa, that it'll be excellent, it'll be fantastic. It'll just accelerate the collapse of globalism, because the blacks can't fix anything, the blacks will break stuff, blacks will run away, stuff will be broken, it won't be repaired, and at the end of the day, it's just going to have impact on Europe. And you can see that the Americans and Europeans are trying to hold Africa out of the sphere of Russian influence. And a couple of months ago, the Jewish hag Yellen suddenly came on a whirlwind tour of various countries in Africa. And I managed to pick up from various news reports that in actual fact what she was doing was she told the blacks to not listen to the Russians. She went and put pressure on the blacks in various governments in Africa to not listen to the Russians. But the blacks and the Russians are close. And here in Africa, American power will become blurred, and Russian power can meet American power here in Africa. And Europe is the big loser. I cannot emphasize enough how fragile globalism really is, right the way through to China. Even to China, it's so fragile, you won't believe how fragile it is. But there's no place that's as super fragile and easy to smash as Africa. Africa's a piece of cake, and Africa's a nightmare. My own conclusion about the Americans, after looking at a lot of history in the past, is that I'm absolutely convinced that the American government is afraid of touching Africa because of African Americans, that their own blacks in America are their Achilles heel, that their own blacks in America will cause trouble inside America if America starts going and fighting in various wars in Africa. And I think that is why the Americans are so shit scared of touching Africa. The Americans will go anywhere on any continent and kill anybody except Africa. The Americans are shit scared of Africa. And I'm convinced it's because of the blacks inside America. They are shit scared of the problems that they're going to have internally inside America. So for the Russians, it's easy peasy. The Russians also have their Cuban buddies. They can come and make trouble. They could come and arm people. I think that Africa could be the number one spot where they can do stuff. But the other thing is that it looks to me like the old alliances, the old communist alliance that existed after World War II, that you'll see all of those nations are back in action, all of them. North Korea, Iran, the whole lot of them. And it seems to me that Putin must be talking to all of them and trying to stir them up. It looks to me like North Korea might be one that might make more trouble. That North Korea and Iran are the toughest ones. That China is not as tough as North Korea and Iran. China's not willing to go to actual military stuff to the same level. What China could do is China could join Russia and try to help light fires in various places. So I think that Putin is trying to get his allies, his useless allies, the ones which he's been relying on but which can't actually dare to move to the next level. I think he's trying to get them to do more stuff so as to start making more noise and trouble everywhere else, because it affects America, because America is the key player that's holding this whole global house of cards together. And so everything impacts America. It's going to be a nightmare for America. And of course, if he can weaken Europe, then Europe's right there, and Europe is critical to the survival of Ukraine. So the bottom line is, if Putin can open other fronts in Africa and anywhere else, maybe Asia, maybe South America or Latin America, but I think that Africa is the prime place where lots of shit could go down and they could cause more and more trouble, and it's going to be really, really hard for the West, for America and for Europe to try and contain that, because both America and Europe are in a trap of their own where they can't just come and kill the blacks, and they can't just come and overthrow states. So their political ability to meddle in these wars is difficult, and they're going to have to come in and give arms to blacks and train them and hope that they do well on the battlefield and, you know, keep on training them. So Africa could become a place for proxy wars. And Africa is already so weak. Africa's pathetic. The Nigerians, I mean, there's Nigeria with 200 million people, and Nigeria cannot even beat a couple of Muslims. South Africa and Rwanda and Mozambique and their allies, which include Botswana and maybe even Zimbabwe, can't defeat a couple of Muslims in Mozambique. So there's lots of tiny little wars, like miniature wars, teeny weeny little wars, and these blacks can't even fight back against it, even with Western help. They're absolutely useless. So, you know, Africa could become a cesspool of instability, all kinds of warfare, and then it'll just break everything, every aspect of globalism. And it could unleash huge humanitarian problems for the West. The West is always stupidly going and feeding the blacks all the time and giving medicine to them. And now they could find that they've got huge numbers of blacks that they've got to look after. And they've also got even bigger numbers of blacks that want to flee from Africa. So I must tell you that if there's a place that Putin could set on fire, it's Africa. And everything is perfect for it. Everything's perfect for it. The whole setup of black Africa after the whites lost their battles and we've all retreated out of things, the whole setup is just perfect. It's perfect. It's like freaking dry grass. And you just need to throw a match in there, man, and you could destroy most of Africa. You could destroy most of Africa and set it on fire, and the fire just won't stop burning. And for Putin, what does it matter? It doesn't matter to him. He's got his own raw materials. He's got tons of his own raw materials. He doesn't need much from Africa, and all he needs to do is give some guns and, you know, tell the blacks, do this and do that, fight those people for me, give me some business deals here and there. For him, it's easy peasy, it's cheap, and he could freaking cause lots of mayhem. So here is Putin, and he's looking for some method of beating back the West, but he doesn't have the same resources as the West. So he needs to fight some kind of asymmetric war against the West. Africa and the Third World are the perfect places for Putin to go, because for a small amount of money, a tiny amount of effort, he could create a lot of harm for the West, especially Europe. And so all of those things, it's just win-win for Putin all the way. It's win-win for Putin. He lights those fires, keeps them burning, tries to make them burn out of control, and it's going to make a headache for the West like the West has never had. And it's the one place where America just is going to really battle. America is going to really shit bricks, because it's the one place where America doesn't like fighting. America's absolutely useless at it. America only deals with Africa using politics and economics, and that's not going to be enough. And the only people whose real sphere of influence that it's in are the Europeans. And so the Europeans can get involved, but Africa's a huge place, and it's going to be a very tricky business. The French are about the best at handling Africa, and even the French have had a really hard time. So now the Germans, the British, other European countries that have long ago not had any military influence in Africa, now they're going to find themselves in a whole different spot. This is going to be a nightmare. And this would be the perfect way for Putin to hit back at the West in an asymmetric way. One final thought, because this is not comprehensive, but one final thought is that the Russians could come and create problems in South Africa. South Africa would be the perfect place to cause huge problems, especially for Europe, especially for America, because South Africa is more strategic. But even so, before I just say too much about South Africa, even so, there are places in Africa where Putin could go and he could cause a lot of trouble that still would impact America a lot, like Central Africa. In Central Africa, if Putin teamed up with the Muslims or Putin did his own thing in Central Africa, especially in Zaire, he could actually create a lot of problems for America. America in the past has been willing to allow anybody to rule Zaire, and they just pay them off big time in order to just keep running Zaire, and the Americans just turn a blind eye to what they do. And I think that Zaire, the Congo, that area in Central Africa could be a big place for Putin. But there could also be new conflicts that Putin can start. There are places in Africa that have not had wars, but that are becoming very unstable. Kenya is the perfect example. The British have got so many links to Kenya, and the British have boasted so much about how wonderful Kenya is, but Kenya has actually become very overpopulated, and Kenya is becoming very politically unstable. And all that Putin has to do is just find some kind of opposition movement and see if he can try start a civil war in a place like Kenya. In the case of Putin, his two main opponents are, of course, America and Britain. So if he wants to hurt Britain, another place he can go is Nigeria. Nigeria is the perfect place to go and light some fires. Nigeria's already got a war between the Muslims and the Christians that have raged on for ages, and it's unstoppable. Putin could go, and if he could go and stuff up Nigeria, then there will be a fuel problem, because the British and others are buying fuel from Nigeria. So there are plenty of things where Putin could be spiteful, and where he could go and, with a little bit of work, he could start lighting some fires, creating some problems, because now America's got to go and look at this and look at that. America is everywhere, and so America's involved in every country on the planet. And so if something starts burning out of control and it affects this American ally and that American ally, America can have a huge number of headaches. So there's incredible numbers of problems that can come from this. But the ultimate thing for Putin would be if Putin could start trouble in South Africa. Because by reviving all the old stuff, he could come and make trouble in South Africa. The ruling party, the ANC, was funded by the Russians. So they are totally tied to the Russians and the Cubans. There's no ways in hell that the ANC is going to arrest Putin if he comes here for BRICS. You can already see that the blacks are under a lot of pressure from the West. The blacks have been trying to pull out of the ICC, the International Court. They've been trying to pull out of that. And even within a few days, they've issued totally opposite statements about it. The one day they say they're pulling out of it, the next day they say they're not. Clearly, diplomats are at work. Diplomats are at work there. And the blacks are being put under pressure by America. So now these blacks have got to make difficult choices. But South Africa is in the sphere economically. South Africa is caught in the sphere of European industry and European economic power. So the blacks have got a problem. If the blacks turn on America and Europe, then the economic consequences for the blacks in South Africa will be massive. So if the blacks turn on Europe, then there are going to be huge consequences economically in South Africa. That would be a nightmare for the ANC. So I think the ANC is really trying to not destroy the economy. But for Putin, Putin wouldn't care. And so the thing for Putin is, can he find blacks in South Africa that are radical enough that he could arm them? Should Putin go against the ANC? Putin could turn to many groups and see who's willing to take weapons, because that's the way the Russians have worked traditionally. They've done this for decades in the past. This is their modus operandi. They come with weapons. The Russians don't come with medical kits. They don't come with bags of food. The Russians come with guns. And the Russians will come and give the guns to people and tell the people, listen, you've got to go and do this and do that. And off you go. That's how the Russians have functioned for decades and decades, and it does work. So among the options that exist is that the ANC gets desperate, that it tries to lie and fool the West while secretly cooperating with Putin. But I think that if the Russians start feeding weapons to the blacks, that this is going to then become a big thing. Other possibilities for the Russians are to find hardcore blacks, if they see that the ANC is not doing what needs to be done, find some hardcore blacks, arm them. Maybe arm them with the permission of the ANC clandestinely. There are many games that could be played. But I think at this point, the blacks in South Africa are not keen on going hardcore. So that is where they are today, but you never know where they might be in a year from now or 2 years from now. Things are bad, and where this could really become an ugly thing is, I'll tell you the time when the ANC will fight. The time when the ANC will just throw all caution to the wind is when the ANC sees that it's going to lose power in South Africa. If the ANC believes or sees evidence that it's going to physically lose power in South Africa, then the ANC will immediately turn to Putin and do everything that Putin wants. And then they won't care. Then they'll burn down everything they can, because then they've got nothing left to lose. So the thing to watch is to watch and see either whether the ANC that's ruling does that, or whether a split-off part of the ANC, like Zuma and Malema, for example, Zuma, Malema, the South African Communist Party, those guys could be the perfect guys who could go to Putin and say to Putin, give us the stuff. Let's go. We want to move to the next level. So it could even be that the ANC splits off and that we end up with one part of the ANC armed by Russia and the other part is weak and pathetic and it hangs in with Europe and America. But then it's going to be the hardcore guys versus the weaklings. And then Russia would have another option. There are whites in South Africa who think that the Russians are going to be helping out the whites. I can't see that. I think that at the best, the Russians would say to any whites that are pro-Russian, the Russians will tell them to work with the blacks that the Russians approve of. So if the Russians arm some blacks in South Africa, the Russians might say to the whites, well, if you work with us, then you've got to work with those blacks. And we'll give those blacks and you guys some guns, and you've got to go do some stuff. So that could be one way that the Russians will accommodate the whites. Would the Russians be prepared to fund a white revolution? I don't think so. I don't think so, because worldwide, the Americans, the Europeans, and the Russians and the Chinese, everybody who's anybody in the world has written off the white South Africans. They've written off the white South Africans as a military force, as a force that can be used for violence. And so they don't believe that the white South Africans are capable of anything. They would be interested in a handful of guys who can go and do special forces work. But I don't see that they are going to expect the whites to rise up and engage in major warfare and big fighting. So I can't see them doing that. Furthermore, another problem for them, and this includes the Russians, is that the Russians have gone around the world telling everybody that they've brought them democracy. America has gone around the world telling everybody that they have brought them democracy and they are protecting their democracy. So the Russians are pumping democratic stuff across the world. The Americans are the same. And who's going to want to fund the whites? Because to fund the whites and support the whites would be racist. And it means that it would piss off 90% or 95% of all their allies. So even the Russians would have a diplomatic problem. If the Russians were to fund the Boers to fight the blacks, that would not work for them. Unless the Russians had a very specific belief that such a war could be more effective for them. But I don't see any indication why the Russians would even believe that and why the Russians would be willing to do something like that. If they were to do it, they would do it clandestinely. They would do it clandestinely, and if exposed, they would deny it. I really don't see anything in the politics of the Russians that indicates that they'll do a damn thing to help whites in South Africa. Not one chance in hell. What the Russians want are people that they can give guns to and people who will go and cause mayhem. That's what they need. And the blacks are game for that any day. There are always some disenfranchised, angry blacks that they can do that with. Even if they're not effective, they can find them. So unless there was a very, very, very special thing going on, I don't see the Russians easily doing that. I think the Russians have got many more easier and cheaper options. So as much as the Russians want to use South Africa, there's still going to be a fight for getting influence in South Africa itself. This year is going to be very fascinating to watch as this war hots up, how South Africa plays its game, because South Africa is even weaker than the Chinese. The Chinese are rather pathetic. South Africa is very weak, but they are part of BRICS. I think that the blacks in South Africa will always stick with the Russians, because the blacks know from past experience they have a deal with the Russians. They know the Russians will always give them guns when they need it, whereas they can't do the same with the West. So that has always been the traditional edge that the Russians have had over the Western world. As the Russians come, they give cheap weaponry quickly to anybody who wants it. Anyone who wants a gun, they can go and get it. Russians will give it to them cheap, give them as much as they need, no questions asked. The Russians don't care who gets killed. The Russians just want somebody that goes and does some stuff and causes some shit. The point is that for Putin in the long term, it is important to light fires, as many fires as he possibly can elsewhere. Even those Chinese balloons that moved over America and Canada, those could also have been done at Putin's prompting. That was also a very weird thing that was done that had no purpose at all. And to me, it's like Putin is trying to force the Chinese to do something. And I have come across mention that Putin is actually giving the Chinese the very, very latest Russian technology. So I think for Putin, what Putin might be doing as a long-term strategy is just try and hold on and keep the war rolling for the next couple of years and knuckle down and just see what else he can do to deflect, because in raw combat power, he's not able to push the Ukrainians back. And that's a big problem for him. It's a huge problem. But it looks like Putin is really going to do his utmost to hang in there. So for him to use more and more desperate measures to light any fire, do anything that he possibly can, that opportunity is there. So I think that this thing can still get wilder. We need to see what else can the Russians do. Can the Russians do more than just Sudan? And in the case of Sudan, they found, CNN was able to prove that there is a Russian plane and that Wagner actually flew from Syria into Sudan, and that they did some military operation with some blacks, and that has given the blacks the opportunity to test out their weapons and their rocking. So in Sudan, Putin is supporting the RSF, which is the weaker of the two sides. But now by coming in and arming them up, it looks to me like the RSF with some Wagner and Russian backing, I don't see any reason why the RSF, despite being weaker, can't knock out the bigger power in Sudan. So if the RSF starts making headway and starts winning in Sudan, starts winning in a big way, then it's going to present the West with a bunch of problems. It's going to present them with a bunch of problems. Do they want to leave those Russian armed blacks to win the war? Because what can they do after that? So the standard military response would be somebody's got to come and start helping the other side. And Europe would have to get involved. Europe and America would have to get involved. But there are signs to me that America is taking a lot of strain. And that is why America is starting to push the Germans, pushing the Germans so hard to get involved in this war. And it may be that America is going to start pushing Europe more and more. That's why they're trying to get Europe to arm up faster. Because the Americans can see that they've got to deal with the whole world. They're the ones that globalized everything. Now they've got to look after everything. And they're discovering that there are going to be many areas that they can't function. And Africa is perfectly suited for Europe and for the whites of South Africa. Africa is the perfect playground for Europe and the whites of Africa. It's our playground. This is where we can play. So I think that the more fires Putin lights, the greater it's going to be. First of all, I don't care if Africa collapses. The more it collapses, the better. The more trouble it unleashes, the more instability it creates in Africa and in Europe and in America. I think it's all win-win. For me, anything that burns down the current system and burns down globalism is wonderful. And I hope that Putin can do more than just Sudan. I hope so. And even if Putin comes to South Africa and tries to stoke up trouble against us, which I don't think is going to be easy for him to do, but even if Putin does that, hey, let the chips fall where they may. It's going to give us our chance. Our chance is coming. Our chance is coming. We're not finished. And nobody thinks that we amount to much. And they're all in for a big surprise. That if push comes to shove and our lives are on the line, everyone's going to be in for a big surprise.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.